Hey everyone, hey, welcome into this episode of the Art Wonk Podcast. I'm Neville Parker, your host, and this is, episode number 54. And today I'm going to be playing you an interview I did with a gentleman called Benoit Avely. Benoit is a wonderful, wonderful chap. He's quite a delight. He is a woodworker extraordinaire. So Benoit sculpts predominantly these days, started off doing wood turning, but he makes the most amazingly textured, wonderfully graphic wood sculptures. Now, I got to meet Benoit originally up in Canada, but have shared a number of collabs with him, and I am always amazed at this guy's presence. Benoit's tall, dark and broody, I guess some would describe. He's not broody though, he's just quiet. He has this really lovely sort of presence and self-contained sense of someone who understands their worth, and yeah, he exudes confidence. And when you see his work, you can see in the work this amazing skill, and you understand why he knows how good he is. He's not arrogant or anything. He definitely doesn't present any of those features. But, you know, the first time you meet Benoit, you know this is a person of substance. And it was lovely to get to sit down and chat with him. Unfortunately, though, and you'll hear it in his voice, the poor guy. This is a conversation I managed to capture him. Final morning, everyone's getting ready to clean up. It's a bedlam. And he's been working till 4 a.m. to finish a piece, and he was working at the forge with others. This is a very large piece that he'd made, so there was a lot riding on them getting the base part right, and a wonderful team of people rallied around to make that happen. But he had to be 100% focused and on the ball right up until that last moment when they made the last decision. The piece they came up with was extraordinary. But poor Benoit, he had so little sleep. And I'm not laughing at him, just it happens to us all at different times, but very few then get dragged in front of a microphone and asked to chat about their lives in a language that's not their mother tongue. So this conversation with Benoit is really lovely, and he's very generous in his sharing of his experiences and his knowledge. But if he sounds a little flat, forgive the man. He earned the right to sleep and should really have been sleeping instead of talking to us. But this is collab, and people, they dig deep, they give extra, and we thank Benoit very much for doing that. At the end of the interview, I'll give you his contact details, because this is someone I'd love for you to have a look at their work. He inspires so many of us. I'm not a woodworker at all, but the way he approaches space and shape, scale, texture, all those things makes me look at the way I do my metalwork and makes me think closer about where am I getting lazy and how could I do more. So this is Benoit and our conversation. Thanks very much, Benoit. I really appreciate you doing this, mate.
So I am Benoit Avely.
Yeah,
I am a wood sculptor from France. I've been working with wood for 20 years. It's going to be 20 years in April, next April, that I started my business as a woodworker and wood turner at the beginning. And I've been turning for 5-6 years at the beginning, and then my work evolved to more sculptural work. And here I am today,
years later. 20 years, yeah, is amazing. Did you think that it would go like this?
Well, no, because at the beginning when I started wood turning, I took an 8-week class.
So it's just a short class?
Yeah, it was a short class just to discover the craft of wood turning as a hobby, because I knew I liked wood and I thought it would interest me. So I took the class, and it turned out that I liked it more than expected. And at the end of the class, the guy I took the class with was selling a lathe, a bandsaw. So I bought them, and I was quickly able to start turning in a very little workshop. which was only 7 square meters.
Oh, okay. That's intimate.
So I had the lathe in the middle and I could just about walk around it, and that was it.
Okay. And that still a plan for a hobby at that point?
Yes. Yes. So I started making the things I had learned to turn during my class. So I would turn little boxes, salad bowls, platters, spinning tops, and things like that. And my friends and family saw what I was making, and they started to want to buy my work, and it was close to Christmas.
Yep.
So they bought things for presents, and I thought it was, unexpected, but very nice. So I carried on, and I knew that I had to be somewhat registered to sell my work officially.
All right, yeah.
So I inquired, I called a few friends, and they said, oh, you have to go see we have a chamber of craft or artisans.
Yep.
So I registered, and I became a professional.
The perfect plan, really. It was fun.
It was very smooth, yeah. And everybody was saying, oh, what a risk you're taking, and it's going to be hard. But there was no big investment at the beginning. For a few thousand euros, I had all my gear.
What were you doing before that?
After I graduated from high school, I did like summer jobs, and I traveled for about 3 years.
Wow.
And the plan when I started woodturning was to go to Spain, spend a few months there to learn Spanish better than high school Spanish. And at the same time, I discovered woodturning, and I thought maybe if I have a training of some sort, it'll be easier to find a job in Spain. So I took the class, and I never went to Spain. Well, I went to Spain later on to teach woodturning.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, the loop on that one.
Yeah.
So you end up with this, obviously wood just meets what you need. It's a sympathetic sort of substance for you.
Yeah, and I grew up on a farm, and we would always have wood around. We would always build things and fix things. And as a creative person, I would build burn houses and toys. So it's a material I've been familiar with since a very long time.
Yeah, I think I was around 6, 7-ish when I found some metal rod. And my grandfather, my mum's father, gave me a file to show me how I could make a mark on it. And from then on, steel for me was just like this amazing thing. So it comes from somewhere quite early, doesn't it, for a lot of us?
Yeah.
And so you were playing, you're building, and that part, your family, were they creative as well?
I've got a quite creative family, yes. I've got an uncle who is a wood sculptor as well.
Oh, right, yeah.
And my sister is a flutist, so she's teaching and playing in a quatuor.
A quartet?
Quartet, yep. For classical baroque music.
Okay.
My grandfather was creative as well. He was writing and always building creative stuff.
So that's a good growing space for a young man to go, yeah, it's not so unusual to do it.
Yeah, and my parents have always encouraged me to do what I liked doing.
Yeah.
So when I started that, they were very supportive, which is good.
They have guilds you register. Was there good support for you starting out?
Not really, because the Chamber of Art, I'm not sure how to say it in English, Chamber of Artisans is a huge thing that gathers craft, but not only. Also house builders are in the same guild.
Yeah.
So there's no particular support. But a few years after that, I discovered that there was a sort of union for craft. Sort of guild, but it's not a guild, but it's really like a union to defend the rights and the crafts in general. So I became a member, and that opened up a completely new world, because that was a good support.
Yeah.
There were lots of helps for to go to shows, subsidies to go to shows, and prices negotiated with suppliers and carriers and all that. And a lot of information as well going around. And also I got to meet a lot of people that I didn't know from of any sorts of crafts with similar issues or similar activities as me. And a lot of young people, the craft people I had met at the beginning were older people, like my parents' age, most of them. And then getting into that union, I found out that there were a lot of young people as well taking up crafts and trying to make a living with it.
And what's the craft movement like in France? Is it seen as a viable art form, or are you outsiders? How does that work?
It's got a glamorous image by the general public.
Yeah.
But everybody thinks it's really tough to make a living with it, which is not wrong, but it's not impossible.
Yeah.
And it's not, I've worked shifts in a factory just after I graduated, and that was really hard. That was really hard work. So it doesn't come as a given, but you have to build your own thing. But it is possible. And as a self-employed, working alone, I have a lot of flexibility. So it is possible to make a living with craft.
Generally, we trade maybe a little bit of financial security for freedom to do things. It's, nothing's perfect, sadly, but it's to me, this is a more perfect way of being me than other ways would be. So Rick has been in and chatted with me, and he said he's been to the French collab a couple of times and seen you up there.
Uh-huh. That's where I met him,
How many times have you done? You've been here a number of times. How many collabs have you collected?
Well, the first collab I went to was the French one in 2015. I had missed the first one, so I went only to the second one, and I discovered a completely new world. Well, like what we're all experiencing here, good energy, lots of creative people. And I liked it so much that the week after, Martha, who I think came here a few years ago as well, Martha Blanc, and Jerome.
Yes.
She said, oh, the application for Emma is due next week. Do you want to go? And I said, sure. So we applied and we went. So that was the second collab.
Martha's work is stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very delicate, very graphic.
Yeah, the little wire pieces that she's been doing are just, oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's where I met you at Emma.
At Emma, yeah.
And so there were a few people from here. So I heard about this collab, and then I signed up for the one the year after in 2017.
That sense of family that translates from whatever country, it's a mindset, I think, more than a skill set even. It doesn't really matter what you do, it's how you think that
exactly
works in the space.
It's the way the brain is creative, I guess.
Yeah, and for me, it's permission to relax. You know, you don't have to explain your crazy idea or whatever so much as share it.
Yeah.
Because nobody's here going to judge you too much, because we're all having crazy ideas.
Exactly. About so you can be totally free yourself. And since everybody's creative, I think it really brings a good mood, because when you create when I create, at least I feel very well. So it's probably the same for everybody here, and it builds up, and it's a fantastic moment.
And you get I get the charge lasts for quite a while. You know, you come to one of these, the first ones changed my life, changed everything, got used to it. And now I just find the connection, that sense of validation or acknowledgement is good. And that can carry me for quite some time. Then I need another one.
Yes, and sometimes there are little things you will do during a collab that are not finished pieces, but just ideas that germinate, and they can come out a long time later in your work.
Yeah.
And having seen everything around being made, also makes a very good brain soup that you can eat over
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, just pick out the bits that you're ready for chewing now. So what was your favourite piece? Have you had one that you've made over the years that you thought, oh, I just nailed that, and what a shame I did it at Collab because it went off to auction?
Well, there is one I made at Emma, which was a sphere I had turned, and I covered it with metal
the screws
bits,
and, yeah.
screws, hinges,
yep.
all sorts of gear
that, was
that I could find in the metal areas.
Yep.
And I managed to get it at the auction, so I still have it at home.
Yep.
And some people have wanted to buy it from me, but I want to stick to it because it's the first really strong collaborative piece, and it's full of memories, so I really want to keep it. And it's also very different from my usual work because
yeah.
it's got a steampunk look. It's metal, so...
Well, and that happened before steampunk, as I recognized it, showed up. It's sort of that's grown after that. So it was quite a leading type of thing mm-hmm. that you did. So favorite artist, I don't want to put you on the spot, but people that you've worked with that have just somehow they, when you're around, it goes up another level. Have you people that you've found that have done that for you?
Oh, there are probably lots I have
lots.
To think,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday evening we spent, well, yesterday, last night, we spent most of the night in the metal tent working with Henry and Erwin,
yeah.
who are forging legs for one of the pieces I had made. And working with those two guys was fantastic. Like Henry, you feel like you can't be in trouble when he's forging. He's... handling the thing, and you can see that he knows what he's doing, and
he has a quiet calm about him,
and he's also very good at explaining
yeah.
what he's doing or what is happening, like, oh, look at the steel here, it's red but it's not hot enough, things that I would not know, because for me it's red, but it's, even if it's not the right sort of red, so very good at yeah explaining and quiet and hard working at the same time.
Yeah.
And
then you've got Erwin, who's kind of, he's got all this knowledge built up over all the years because he's been doing this for a long time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so the pair was great. I feel like they were almost my assistants. I was there guiding. Of course, we had to adapt it to the wood. So I was leading the main idea, but... it was, really great. And well, lots of other people. I'm tired today, so I can't think of,
no,
of names.
It's okay. It's not so much about calling out everyone, but just...
And I know that in a few days when I get back home...
the names will be everywhere. Yeah.
I'll know, oh, this was a strong moment with this person, or this was... This is what I will remember.
Yeah, so... Which of the collabs are better or easier for wood for you? They each have quite different compounds. I think of the stage and everything over in Emma is large and there's room to move
mm-hmm.
and great air and light because of the way it's set up.
It is.
But the intimacy here means everyone's closer and you kind of get that energy rush.
So, yes.
Yeah.
It's really different. Emma is large. All the workshops are further away, which is good because you have space. Here it's more close together. If you do the French one, it's even closer. It's all in one building.
Oh, wow.
There's not a lot of space. It's probably the best one for wood because there's a full workshop, very good quality workshop with all big equipment,
right.
A lot of lathe, planer, thicknesser.
A level floor instead of on a hill.
It's flat and it's made, it's a wood turning school, so it's got all the equipment for that. Cool. But it doesn't mean that the pieces that come out in wood are better than here. It's just sometimes more
different.
Simple to
yeah.
move on something because you have the right tool. But... the idea is to do with what is there.
Yeah.
That's the good
thing. And that's the thing. I think sometimes the physicality of this place, the way it makes you, you have to move a certain way, mm-hmm. Will bring something new out, because you are standing on a bit of a bank there and moves the weight slightly maybe.
And you keep on meeting people.
Yeah, because you
change place, so you go to the other place and you see three other persons and you chat with one and another idea comes and you see what's going on in the other areas. So it's very lively in this way.
So in that sense, you work on your own normally at home?
Yes.
Do you find that this is an interruption to your flow or...?
Well, it sure is. It's very, very different from what I do at home.
Yeah.
It's good for a week. Yes. It's very intense. I couldn't do that in the long run. I need my quietness and time alone.
So you're someone who's comfortable in himself as far as being on your own?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's funny. We've got a number of people that would say they're introverts, say they're happier in themselves, and yet... as you say, it's a limited time and you get a lot for the effort, so it's worth it. But maybe that's part of why we come, is because it pulls us out of our normal.
Mm-hmm. And also, like what we were saying, there's no judgment. So even being surrounded with people on a daily basis would be too much for me. But here, there's no pressure, except for time on the last day, but everybody's willing to help and there's no one to fear, which
no, is good. That is nice to hear, because it's meant to be a safe place where we explore ideas. I like the fact that you can get up, wander off, go for a swim, or just choose to sit, and there's no obligation to do anything. We've come to make, maybe. I come for the people. We know making's going to happen for me, so I know I'm going to do something, but I can do that at home. So it's more the people, the friendships, the connections, the conversations that my wife avoids because I want to talk about weird stuff and she's like, no, we're here. Those conversations of what if we tip it upside down and cut it in half and then stick it back together type thing, people actually welcome, and then they get weirder again. Yeah. So what is it that gets you to come all the way down here? Is it the climate? You're getting away from the cold?
We were talking about that last night after finishing the piece with Erwin. And he said, what makes you come all the way here just for that and straight back home? I think it's the best drug there is. I don't know. It's the energy, the fact that it's very intense. And also meeting all those people from different cultures, different parts of the world. Working in different ways. It's very, very rich.
Yeah, you have somebody like Todd working in that space who is very knowledgeable and very able to share the Māori culture and tell you the different meanings of things or whatever. Then along from that, you've got Rick who's working on a very specific smaller piece, which is a whole different story.
Yeah.
I find that fascinating. I'm always amazed when you get to the auction and things show up that had to have been made in your area, but you didn't see because you were busy or just how it works. It's extraordinary amount of stuff.
Oh, yeah. And we seem to have created more pieces than usual this year. We're a bit more people, I think.
Yeah, 83, I think, this year. So, and a lot of big pieces, good big pieces too, not just big because they could be. There's actually the quality looks quite impressive.
Yeah, lots of big scale work.
Yeah. And, your the tilt piece that you did, we put together earlier than the final piece. Have you presented a piece standing that way before?
No, I've never done that.
That was quite incredible. It reminded me of an old-fashioned mirror that you might see in a Victorian house, for instance, that era. But not. So people, if you go to the collaborations website, just word collaboration with a Z on the end, then .co.nz, there'll be photos of the 2023 collaboration. So you see the pieces we're talking about. Do you have a website that you have your work at?
I do have a website, yes. It's www.benoitaverly.com.
Okay, I'll put that in the notes to make sure.
I also have an Instagram, which I have even more work shown.
How did, and again, and just under your name?
It's Benoit Averly Sculptor.
Yeah.
So it's easy to find.
Your uncle, is he in Everly as well?
Yes.
Ah.
He is as well, yes.
Is there any kind of competition in terms of,
you know, Not at all. We don't work on the same field, although we both work with wood and make sculptures. He works a lot in parks, gardens, outdoor work,
right.
Big installations,
yep.
Larger scale work. And my work is for indoors and a bit more small.
You've got a lovely design flair on top of the, you know, it's wood, but the wood doesn't seem to have to be the issue. It's texture, especially texture. You're just doing amazing things. Was that something that just evolved? How is it? It's almost like a language of its own.
I don't know how it started, but I remember in 2004, I took a class with Michael Hoselek in France.
Yeah.
And he had brought from his workshop little bits to put in a Dremel to do some texturing. And I tried one, and I remember the very first piece I made with this bit, covering a sort of half sphere with little cuts. And I really liked this surface that was not smooth. When you start turning wood, you polish it and you oil it, or you put some wax on it so it's very smooth and shiny. And I really liked that contrast. It was like creating another material with the initial material. So that was really interesting. And I bought one of those bits and I started to put more texture on my work. And on the side of that, for close to 15 years, I've been photographing textures in everyday life. Mm-hmm. Whenever I see something.
Yep, your manhole nice cover texture. Series was amazing. When you went through Canada, I remember all these manholes showing up on your feet. It was like, wow. Yes.
And texture is everywhere.
Yep.
Even in the most boring places, you look on the floor, you look at a wall, it's everywhere. So I would take these photos, and some people said to me, oh, there's a connection between your photos and your work. And I had not been aware of that. So when I discovered that and thought, oh, yeah, now I understand the connection, I paid even more attention to that. And now I take some photos knowing that I will be using the texture. It's not the idea of replicating exactly the same texture, but it's looking at what I have seen that I like and trying to extract almost the essence of it, or really what I really like in it, and I make it come out in another way through my work.
Because a lot of it's quite labor-intensive. Like, you're doing a lot more, you're touching the work a lot more than if you just simply finished it smooth and walked away.
Yes, it's very repetitive.
But the focus necessary not to lose the balance of the space that you're working on, the negative space that you're leaving, all that. How do you keep your, do you have a rhythm?
I usually listen to some music when I do that. And before I start, it depends on the textures I do, but very often before I start, I practice on a spare piece of wood to get into a rhythm.
Yep.
Because texture is all about rhythm. And being repetitive without being too mechanical.
Yeah.
So I have to get in the flow, and then I get onto my work, and I try to be as consistent as I can, and paying attention that after an hour, two or three or eight working on a piece, the last cuts are similar to the first ones, because my moves can change and my body gets tired. So I try to pay attention to that.
Within this environment, it's kind of hard to get that calm space where you can do that measured thought, because there are so many people moving past, carrying all mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, and being interrupted,
yeah.
jumping from one thing to another, coming back to the work.
But you still manage to get there, but it's more tiring, or just it's what it is, you just swallow and do it?
I deal with it.
So when you look at the I guess, the marketplace up there. What's the culture like for just art in general? Are people buoyant? Do you hear lots of good things about the arts, or are people talking about it as a, you know, it's in a bad place? Is there any sense of that with your world?
I'm not sure. I see what you mean.
So, you know, at the moment, people are talking about economic crisis and prices and everything, and say, oh, you know, it's hard to sell art right now or whatever. The press can make a lot of things a bit more gloomy than they need be.
Well, I think it really depends who your clients are. A lot of craft people are struggling at the moment with low prices or mid-range prices, yep, because the people who would buy those creations are struggling on their own side. So it's tough for a lot of craft people. But with higher end pieces, you reach out to people who don't have any money problems, and there it's only getting better and better. So it really depends on what you make.
Right. And you typically would be aiming at that higher end bracket, so you got a bit of a buffer there.
Yes. So unexpectedly, again, I won a contest in 2006, and the prize was a free booth on a big trade show in Paris. And that trade show brings in a lot of interior designers. And I was going to that show to sell to stores with the wholesale prices, production of items like boxes and small decorative sculptures. And it turned out my work was too expensive for most stores and too small for the interior designers.
Oh, wow.
And at the same time, I felt like I wanted to make bigger things, so it encouraged me to move that way. So I kept on going to that show, and I found out that the interior designers were a good market. They work on either private homes or hotels or cruise ships, and they actually need decoration. So it's seen as decoration rather than art, but it doesn't matter to me. I work the same. I know how I make it. I know what I have in mind when I do it. And it's a really good market. So that's what I've been living on for now 15 years.
Well done. Your Instagram has grown into quite major numbers, which shows that people are genuinely interested in what you're doing. So, you know, there's lots of ways of framing, whether it's art, craft, whatever. I think most of those are a waste of energy. It is what it is. It's just the context of the conversation. But this idea of going to the source, to picking the decision maker instead of trying to deal with the end person who doesn't really know what they want, that's a very clever and quite surprising thing. When I first learned about that from you, it's like, wow, I don't know that we have that type of trade thing here in New Zealand, so it's something that, you know, works for Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Have others started to follow you into that space?
Yes, well, a lot of friends or colleagues do that same show, Vivian, who is here also.
Yeah.
He has started doing it a few years ago, so he's in the same sort of market. So people who go to that show start dealing with interior designers, and they also find that it's a very good market. Mm. It's not an easy one to build up, because with interior designers it can take time. You meet them, they like your work, then they have to remember you, then they have to have a project in which your work can fit, then they propose your work to the clients and all that. But once it has started, if they ordered work once and everything has gone fine, then they will order again. And
so you find when you're traveling that there are opportunities to either find new markets or share your work, or do you focus just on the collab and the break and then go back to that world?
Well, this trip here, I'm just in and out, so I don't have time to do any more than the collab. But in September, last September, I did a collab in Western Australia, in just south of Perth.
Yeah.
And on my way back, I stopped 5 days in Dubai because that was the normal route. And I have clients in Dubai, so I planned business meetings with them to show them the new works and just to connect with them, especially because of COVID and the 3 years we've been without shows and without seeing each other. So it was a good way to meet them. I also met new clients there.
The world seems a little bit smaller when viewed from Europe because there's so much connection versus here we are, we're just sort of in the bottom corner and tucked away.
You're really far away.
It's a frustration, but it's also, it gives us freedoms too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact that you come back again would suggest we're not doing too bad a job. Is there anything you'd like to say to people who are, you know, considering maybe doing a collab or making one happen even? Is there any advice you'd pass to people?
I don't know everything about what needs to be done to have one happen, but if you're willing to participate in one of them, I think if you consider it, you should go. It's really hard to explain what it is about to someone that has never done it, but you should go and go without any pre-made thoughts about what you're going to do and or how it's going to happen, but just willing to get creative, try new things, engage with people and see, experiment without aiming at something successful necessarily. Yeah. But just
getting there's success, isn't it? You know, once you're here, you've succeeded. So
exactly. And then it just happens, and you can pick what you liked and pick the good ideas from the bad ones, because there are things that are not successful as well.
Yeah.
In what we do, sometimes we experiment on something and, well, it doesn't work, but at least we tried.
Well, I've watched a lot of people come with a trick or a technique they do at home in a perfect environment with all the right tools and try to show people here, and it just would not work. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you're relying on doing, it's kind of, that's the end of the story. It makes it harder. So open mind, believe that you have value. Yeah, people seem to come in with doubt, which is a shame. They get there, but it's scary.
And also coming here, I'm limited in with my luggage, so I can't bring all my tools. So I just pick a few burrs, a few discs, and then I rely on whatever will be there. And I spent a lot of time in the wood area, but I could have ended up spending a week welding or painting.
You had a bit of a crack at a diving tank there, the big aluminium tank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you get a texture out of that in the end?
I tried and I saw it worked, but it took a really long time.
Yeah.
So I decided not to start because I thought it would take up too much time for something too uncertain when I had a lot going on already.
What was it like this time? You get a lot of stuff asked of that you couldn't do, or were you still editing? Or
I think I managed to say yes to almost everything that was offered.
Wow.
Well, that took me to 4 a.m. this morning. But no, I don't think there was too much frustration on any sides.
The wood area had a really lovely buzz going in there. There was laughter, there was singing, there was all sorts coming out. It just looked like you had the right mix of people, skills, materials for the most part.
Yeah.
I think the wood turners were a little frustrated. They weren't better suited woods for turning, but that forced them to try different things than they would normally. So
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's a very cool thing. I'm going to let you go and get some rest.
All right.
But thank you so much for this. It's been a pleasure.
Well, it was nice sharing that and having a chat.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Betty.
Wow. Oh, you poor man. But thank you so much, Benoit. Really appreciate that effort. And, yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff in there. Looking at the way he goes about finding his market and just hearing how his world works was really interesting. Definitely a big difference between Burgundy, where he's based in France, and, you know, little old New Zealand. But he's generous and very giving in the way he shares what he does and how. So if you'd like to have a look at Benoit's work, I'd suggest you start with his website, which is benoitaverly.com. And for those of you who don't do French, like I don't do French, it's BenoitAverly.com. Benoit Averly. And yeah, his website is lovely. It explains what he's about, shows you all sorts of different artwork. And if you're interested in Instagram, which is another great visual media platform, he's got 106,000 followers at the moment. So I wouldn't be surprised if you're already following him. But if you're not, it's Benoit Averly. So BenoitAverly_sculptor. And that'll get you to him. Very, very cool man. Very, very cool work. So thanks, Benoit, and thank you for joining us yet again. I'm really enjoying this trip down memory lane, catching up with people. Feels like I've got my friends living in my head, and I hope those of you who are collabers are enjoying this too. Thanks, guys. Catch you again soon. Happy creating.